Welcome, everybody. Let me help you envision, explore, and execute your plans. This is Motivate Me, and I'm Lynette Renda. On today's show, don't let your degrees keep you away from your passion. Meet Suzanne Myers, PhD. Before we get started today, I just want to make sure you know you can go to motivatemepodcast.com, and there you're going to find our show notes, links to all of the resources mentioned. You'll find an application to be on the show. You'll have access to our email, and we can direct you to the Motivate Me Ultimate Support System Facebook page, because nothing matters more to me than to connect with my listeners. So I hope I can do that starting right now. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's show. Our guest today is Suzanne Myers, and Suzanne has a pretty interesting story to share with you. Suzanne has a bachelor's degree in animal production. She has a graduate degree in veterinary science and a doctorate in pathobiology. Yet, Suzanne, what is it that you are doing with your degrees right now?
Well, I primarily use my degrees to teach people and to educate them at different venues that I speak in across the country and here at my farm on a daily basis with the clients that I interact with.
What is it that you interact with them about? What is it that you're doing on your farm?
Right. So I am a horse trainer. I've always had a passion for training horses, and I've always had horses. And while I was getting my degrees at Penn State University, I was also training horses on the side. And after I got married, my training business grew continuously, even though I was working at Penn State after I graduated from there. And so it got to a point where I could follow my passion and train horses full time. And that is what I currently do.
Now, I always start the show with listeners sharing a meaningful passage. Do you have one to share with us today?
Well, we like to say, improve your horse, improve your life. I found that through the years of training horses that I can not only help the horses when other people refuse or don't have the tools to use to help certain horses. Our program has grown and developed to the point where there's really no horse that we refuse to take. And so we really can improve horses in many ways. And in doing so, I've also noted the powerful impact that that has on people. And so we say improve your horse, improve your life. It's sort of obvious that with training horses, you're going to improve the horse. But improving people through training horses is a multifaceted approach. I mean, you can give lessons and teach people how to ride better. And that is the obvious answer to how we can help improve people through what we do. But aside from that, there's the very powerful sort of therapeutic value that training horses and making horses better for people has on as an impact in people's lives.
You know, I can only equate that to the puppy that I have right now. And I keep saying to my husband, you know, I think we're going to need a trainer for our puppy. Now, she's small, meaning tiny, but she's got a very long lifespan. And do I want to have the kind of relationship with my pet, really, that I could bring her places and we can do more things together and interact more? So I can only imagine if you have a horse that's working at the highest level and the relationship is at the highest level, that you would just have more amazing experiences.
That's really true. But, you know, the bulk of my clients are what people in this industry like to call backyard horse owners. And we do have clients that are beginners. We have clients that are in the intermediate block of their learning and relationship with the horses. And we have clients that are at the upper end of the scale in terms of their abilities and what they're doing with their horses. So those clients are performing more in shows and competitive events and so forth. But the bulk of the people that we see are in that intermediate block or your backyard horse owners. And many of those clients have had what we like to say problem horses. They have horses that have issues that a lot of trainers are not willing to deal with, because it takes a lot of time and it takes an extreme amount of patience to be able to modify the behavior of those horses. But the fact is that that can be done with a very systematic and tried and true approach, which we've developed here. I'm not saying we invented it, but we developed a lot of programs that work on a lot of different horses. And so, you know, when people take their horse to somebody and they say, no, you know, there's too many good horses, go find a good one. But they're in love with that horse. That horse is, much like dogs, are part of people's families, especially for the backyard horse owner. And they don't want to hear that. You know, they want to find somebody who can help them build this relationship with this animal that they consider a part of their family. And we've been able to really do that for a lot of people. And in doing so, have really impacted those people's lives. I can't tell you, there's been so many clients that we've worked with that have brought horses to us. And when they pick them up after their time spent with us, many of them just are in tears because, you know, they say, people told me this would never happen. This, I couldn't do it. This horse wasn't worth anything, whatever. And then they see the bond that gets built between this horse and us and subsequently their owners again. And it's just a very, very powerful thing.
That is really touching. I'm trying to envision what your farm looks like. How many people work with you? Because you keep saying us and we. Can you give us a picture of what it looks like? How many people are with you?
Right now, it's a small business. It would be classified as, in terms of industry standards, a small business. We have about 35 acres of ground. Right now, we have 25 horses on the property, most of which are trainers. And some are horses that are being boarded here. And we have some stable management help. So there's a person that's responsible for the stall cleaning and stable management. And then we have an internship program. And basically, there's a paid internship position that is staffed by somebody who is interested in learning about training. And then we offer internships to people through an application process. And the number of interns that we carry at any time is really dependent on, you know, the number of applicants we get. We like to keep it small, within, you know, 1 to 5 interns at any given time, so that it remains sort of an intimate team. And so right now we have 2 interns, and we were taking applications for more for this fall.
You know, what's really interesting about you, I feel, Suzanne, is that not only are you training the horses, you're just a teacher at heart, it sounds, because you're bringing in these interns and you're passing down to them these great skills that you've acquired.
Well, I mean, I really love to teach, and people have told me that I'm good at it, but I don't say that necessarily to toot my own horn, but I guess, you know, you find yourself doing the things that you're good at. And it's interesting to me that when I started this whole quest on learning how to train horses, there was no formal way of doing it. There were a couple of schools which still exist in terms of equine-based studies. But when I was going to college, I opted out of those programs because, in all reality, it's very hard to make a living as a trainer. And so I went to college and followed or pursued my other interests in science and animal studies, thinking that that would be, you know, my primary vocation and that I would always have an aside business training horses because of my intense interest in doing that. Fortunately for me, I was able to make this jump and train full time. But as I was trying to learn more and more about training horses, it occurred to me that there really isn't any specific program designed to give you in-depth hands-on training. And currently, you know, the standard in the industry is that if you want to learn how to do it, you go work with people who have made it big in the industry. So essentially, if I wanted to learn how to train horses, I would call up Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, who were extremely successful either in the breeding industry and or showing industry, and I would ask them if I could come work for them. And many, many times, these people who are very successful with horses are not going to let you do a whole lot of hands-on stuff. You start out cleaning stalls, and you could stay there for 2 or 3 years doing that very job. But I thought, you know, it would be great if there were some venue by which to get a lot of hands-on experience. And so we started putting that out there and accepting applications only from qualified individuals, and qualified meaning that they had to have a very strong passion for horses and a very excellent work ethic. And when you find the right people that are extremely motivated and extremely interested in learning about horses and compassionate about horses, it really works to build their skills through hands-on training. And that's kind of what we do here. You know, again, it's a small program, but I think it's a very significant one for the people that have done it.
Now, I mean, with your credentials, I could see you being affiliated with a college and this being a course offered.
Actually, I looked into that and there are stipulations to that, but I really did try to pursue that. There's an externship program out of Kentucky. They accept a lot of equine applicants for their internship, but it is not a training internship. It's primarily a reproduction-based internship. So students that are interested in equine reproductive physiology can go there. But I was using that system as a model system for how to build a university-associated internship program for training. And it's really not as easy as you would think to be an independent and hook up with a university because, you know, there's a lot of legal issues involved, and especially with the liability risks associated with training and so forth. What we do is the Penn State University, we're located very, very close to them. We're only about 12 miles outside of the main University Park campus. And they, the animal production major there, offers an internship, a careers course, and in that careers course, they offer an externship program. And we have been invited as industry people to participate in that externship program for those students. So twice a year in fall break and then again in spring break, we interview applicants, Penn State students, for a position here for a week-long externship on those 2 weeks. And we've done that for the past several years. And it's been a really rewarding experience, and it's also helped to build our program. So it's been mutually beneficial from that perspective.
And I would just like to point out to my listeners, you know, here you have somebody like Suzanne. She has a passion for horse training. So she goes to school. She gets all these incredible credentials, never letting go of what her passion truly was, which was training horses. She thinks, okay, I'm going to do this on a small scale. I never want to let this entire piece of me go because it's my passion. I can tell this is your passion. You take this and then you teach interns because you recognize that there is no program that necessarily does this. You get a model, you create your own model. There is a little bit of a roadblock, but still you're part of an externship program with Penn State University. So I just want my listeners to hear what you have done to say, okay, what is it I'm doing right now? What is my true passion? If it isn't this, how can I incorporate it into my life, either on a full-time basis like you've done, Suzanne, or just even on a part-time basis? Now, you said making that leap to doing this full-time, there were some challenges. Can you talk to us about that and show our listeners that if they did want to change careers and, you know, make that twist like you did, what did you experience and how did you get past it?
Well, it's always scary, you know, going from the very secure position that you have to trying to trust the business model that you've looked at a million and one times and dreamt about leaping into. As I said, I was working at Penn State and training horses full time. So literally I was working two full-time jobs because I would go to work at Penn State and then come home and train horses until, you know, 11 o'clock at night. And I was married at the time and I got pregnant and we had a daughter. The passion is stirred even more because now I want to have all the time that I want with my daughter. I don't want to be dictated to in terms of when I can take off and how much vacation I can spend with my family and, you know, what horse events I can attend and what I can't based on somebody else's schedule set up for me. And so I went to work at Penn State every day, and I'm grateful for having had that job, but all the more determined that someday I would make that leap. And it isn't easy to do because, you know, especially if you are married, because you have the consideration of your spouse and your family to consider, what if this doesn't work? You know, it's working now. I've got clients now built by several good years of building my reputation and positive feedback and word of mouth advertising. But, you know, what if someday people just decide they don't want to have the horses trained, you know, and I'm out of a job. So it is very scary, but I think, you know, we had some marketing help at one point and they helped us to build the model further in that we, you know, you'll always have multiple streams of revenue in any business. And by branching out to not just training, but also giving lessons and building a trail riding program and a leasing program, you diversify your income. And so that makes your business stronger and more secure for you.
I just want to point this out to my listeners, because that's the difference between people who are in their own businesses and specifically entrepreneurs, which I always define entrepreneur as somebody who's making money when they're sleeping because they have things that they're selling, right? But even having your own business, and I don't know if there's other things that you sell that aren't service-based, but the thing is that most people don't realize they are attached to one revenue stream. If you're working for somebody else and you're counting on that one job, and you know, you just said that that was your challenge, Suzanne. You said your challenge was, you know, do I leave this secure job to go do this and the uncertainty? But like you just said, you ended up with three revenue streams versus one, because anybody could say, what happens if I get laid off? What happens if my company closes?
Correct. Yeah. And actually there's, you know, we have more than three because we also do clinics and demonstrations and we get paid to go to expos. One of the things that I like to do at the expos is give talks at their seminar series. So that's another stream of revenue. And that is also marketing and outreach for my business. So not only do I get paid to go and do those expos, but it feeds back as a powerful marketing tool because seeing is believing. And people may not know who you are until you go to those things. And then that builds your client base and it builds exposure for your business and so forth.
Right. And that's what they talk about when they say about a marketing funnel, how everything spins, turns, relates, and leads back to your business like that. And that's genius. So what do you think you've learned about yourself during this process?
I've learned that, you know, the jump was well worth it. And people often ask me if I miss Penn State. And again, I was grateful to have had that position. It was a wonderful opportunity there. But I absolutely do not miss that job at all. And I've never looked back. I've learned that I can make my own way. And I've learned that having done so has made me extremely happy. I've learned that it's built a very strong bridge between my daughter and I, who now is 15. And she is a genuine talent as a rider and is being looked at by, you know, other people in the industry at a top level because she's been riding since basically she was in the womb. But I've learned that it is so worth it. And I've also learned something else that I think is really powerful. I used to almost feel a sense of guilt because I wasn't volunteering more at different places. Or some people go to food banks and they help deliver food and they volunteer at various places. And I was always so busy with what I was doing and I felt like all consumed by what my passion was. But I have found, and this is really something that I'm just sort of letting myself be okay with, is that I found that the work that I do, and this is based on feedback from other people that I've helped, is really a way of giving back to the community too, because so many of my clients, as I said before, are just so grateful for the relationship that they now have with the horse after being here. And, you know, that if I can make somebody feel good about their life when they go home and they ride their horse and that's their sanctuary when they get on that horse and they go ride and it's a peaceful place for them. If I can make that happen for them if I can make dreams come true like that, I guess that's kind of, I've learned, is my way of giving back to people and not only making a living from what I love to do.
You know what? You are an intelligent, accomplished person, right? And I'm 47 years old. I have a couple degrees. I'm not a young cookie. But for some reason, when I used to hear people say that you need to have a business that's about serving, about giving, I really couldn't understand or equate it. But here, you know, how long have you been doing this now, Suzanne?
I've been training professionally for well over 25 years.
Okay. So, and I was a teacher, right? And I felt the same way. Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not giving enough. Until literally the last 6 months when I learned that, and that's why I believe in what I'm doing so much now, that when I learned service and serving others and doing something with these honest intentions to truly improve the life of others is what it's all about. And you've been doing it your whole life and didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, and at the beginning, I really felt that it was all for me because it was really all I could think about doing that I liked to do.
Because you loved it so much. Because it is your passion.
Yeah. Yes. And now I see the impact that it has on other people, and that makes me feel good.
You know, you're giving me goosebumps right now because I'm just thinking, like, this was an idea I was going to write a blog on. You know, why do we feel guilty when we have these passions that we have in life? Why do we feel guilty about it? We don't feel guilty about doing all these other things for other people. But if it's something we truly enjoy, there seems to be a little bit of guilt that accompanies that, to the point where we can't even see that what we're doing is helping other people too. But it's just that we enjoy it so much that we feel selfish about it.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty
You're
cool.
Right.
I think that is pretty cool. Okay. So do you happen to have a book that you've read that my listeners could be engaged in that has to do with anything we've talked about so far today?
I really don't have a book that's specific to horses, but I think I referenced a book called The Power of Positive Thinking. I can't remember actually the author of that book right now, but I remember reading that a long time ago. I just said to my daughter about reading that for whatever reason we were having a conversation. I said, you know, you really should read that because you are responsible for who you become. And sometimes we let negativity set in because we have our doubts and we have our insecurities. But I think the power of positive thinking is extremely critical, especially if you're going to make a leap like this, because if you can't see yourself there, you'll never get there. And if you quit right before you step up over the hill and see the oasis on the other side, you know, you'll never forgive yourself. So you have to stay positive and focused. And I think that book is a really valuable tool for anybody in any stage of their life, but especially if you're looking to have your own business and you need strength to get you there.
Okay, so I have a couple important things to say. Number one, I'm going to make sure to include that book and its author and a link to it in our show notes. I think that's great advice. The other thing is I love what you said about your daughter and how she has become part of your passion and something that you can pass down to her, you know, if that's the way it ends up going, and that you're sharing what you're doing, plus what you've learned about being positive and how to apply that to life and how it strengthens the bonds with you and your family like that with your daughter. And the other thing that I want to say is, the next part of my show, which is what my podcast is based on, because I believe there are three steps to motivation in order to get yourself to act. And the first thing, you just said it, is envision. So I believe it's envision, explore, and execute. So if we were just to talk about envisioning, what exactly should people who want to start their own business, whether it's training or something that is similar to what you've done, what is it they specifically need to see?
Well, for me, first of all, I knew what my passion was. And I think you know, some people may not like their current situation, but they're not exactly sure even of what their true passion is. And I think they need, this might come under explore more, but they need to explore exactly what that is, and then start to envision ways that they can tap into that to either provide service to others and at the same time make a living at what they want to do. And for me, envisioning takes on various forms because, you know, I envision what I want to do for my business. I see myself always changing the program to get better, so not keeping it static. And the envisioning really drives the innovation process because you think about new things all the time and you see yourself attaining those through a very specific process, a goal-oriented and step-driven process. So, you know, from a global perspective, you have to see where you want to be and the things that you want to be doing. And then on a more micro level, break those down and envision different aspects coming into place as you set those steps and standards and goals to get those things to happen.
And for me, the whole time we've been talking, I have envisioned you on a farm. And you talked about not wanting to be tied down to the hours of a job like teaching. And I saw you, I am very visual, but I saw you being very free out on a farm, doing something you enjoy. And like you said, sometimes till 11 o'clock at night, I could see that. And if I was somebody who was enticed by what you're doing because it was a passion similar to mine, I would do the same thing. Everything you just said and physically see myself in that place. What does that place look like and where do I fit into it?
Yeah, for sure.
So to explore then, and something you said about exploring that you mentioned that I definitely caught on to was a business plan.
Yeah, I mean, even with this business, there are so many different ways that you could go about doing what you're doing. Like being in the horse industry, for example, I have a specific passion for training, but I love horses overall. And so, I mean, I could be a breeder and focus my efforts on breeding high quality horses for a specific industry, or I could be a trainer. And so I just want to have a business with horses, but my real passion is in training horses. And so instead of exploring the option of becoming a breeder, I did dabble in breeding a few mares, but that's really not where I need to focus. So I need to explore the options for what might, you know, what I might like to do best, but then really focus on those that are specific to my passion. And in this case, it is the training.
Right. So you're saying explore the different avenues that you can take that have to do with one specific passion because there's multiple.
For sure. When you think too about growing your training business specifically, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. And I like to have talks with my team members and just put out, you know, have like a think tank and think about different ways that we can become unique as trainers in this business. Because anybody can hang their hat and say, I'm a horse trainer. They can hang their sign against the barn and say horse training 101, you know. But at the end of the day, it's very difficult to become established as a reputable trainer, and that comes through word of mouth. And so when you think about how you're going to be the best trainer you can be so that you have good client feedback, good repeat customer base, and, you know, just build a good solid business, there's a lot of different ideas that you can explore to be the best business you can be. And it doesn't necessarily have to be an industry. There are other trainers in the horse industry that are themselves an industry. I listened to a business segment on the news one day, and this jewelry store owner was talking, and she was a private jeweler in a very big city, and she had to compete with the Kings and the K's and the Chronics and all these other industry leading jewelry stores. And she ended up discussing what she explored for her business as the best business model. And she became very, very successful on a smaller scale. And it gave me ideas on how I could do the same thing in the horse training business. You have to explore different options and how to make yourself unique in what you want to do to be successful.
And people listening right now could be listening to you just the same way, and applying it and trying to figure out how to be the most unique in what they're considering. So, you know, you could be impacting a lot of people just by opening their eyes up to that. What do you think an execution first step should be?
I think most people will advise you to have a business model. So, or a business plan. So you should have a model that you're going by, at least a skeleton of a model, and to get you started, and a business plan. You know, you have to be able to realistically say, well, this is what I can expect to produce in the first year. These are the services that I'm going to give or the products that I'm going to sell. And this is a reasonable expectation of my ability to do that. And, you know, so a basic business plan so that you have something to build from and modify. And you have to have support. You know, in order to execute anything, you have to have the support of family and friends. And if you don't, then you can find those that will support you. But then also financial support, you know. So just getting the people in your life that can give you the help that you need to get started. And then just let your passion fuel the rest.
That's great. What closing advice would you give everybody?
If you're sitting at your day job now and all you can think about is what you should be doing or what you want to be doing, then that is a key indicator that you're ready to consider following your passion and making the jump. And then if you can do the envisioning and the exploration and the execution, I say it's time to do it. You know, I always said when I was working for someone else, I could see myself retiring and then finally getting a chance to explore my passion and being too old or too physically weary to do it. And I said, this is not going to happen to me. That's why I decided to just do it. You know, I wanted to be doing what I wanted to do while I was still young and healthy enough to do it. And I guess that's, you know, that's one of the factors that really helped me make the leap. If it's something that's all consuming to you, then that's a clear indicator that you should be doing it.
And I love that you made that decision to not sacrifice your life, you know, to not sacrifice your life and sit in a job that you didn't love, that you didn't enjoy.
I liked my job, but it wasn't my passion. And I can give more by doing my passion. And that's pretty key. Other people that were doing what I was doing, they were giving, and they were, you know, there's doctors and lawyers and people of all kinds of professions that are absolutely positively necessary. But I've come to realize that what I do is also necessary. And some people may say, well, you have your PhD and you have your master's, and is that wasting that education? No. In fact, it's just an alternate use of that education, because I can still educate people on scientific experiments, scientific research in the equine industry. I can bring the technical into the backyard horse owner's vocabulary, you know, so I can teach people what all this stuff means in one of my streams of revenue, which is going to expos and talking in a seminar series. And that's kind of cool too, because now some people who before couldn't understand all this scientific jargon about horses, I can bring that to them at that venue, and I can say, this is what it means to you. And so, you know, from that perspective, I'm clearly using verbatim my education and my degrees. On a daily level, I still use it to teach and help people.
And the thing is, I am a firm believer that life is a process. Your love for passion as a child, then your education, and now your experience training, even your time teaching, you don't know where you're going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now, and how all of that is going to add up to the next thing that you could be doing.
That is so true. And I think about that a lot, actually. It's so true. And, you know, I guess that's why everybody tells you that, you know, when you're coming through high school, you know, you've got to get good grades and you've got to prepare for college. And you really do. Education is extremely important. I don't regret one second of my education. In fact, if I had it to do all over again, I would still go get those degrees, because it has brought me to a point where I am who I am. And I think being who I am is what brings my clients to me. You know, that certainly is one of those factors that makes my business stand out from many, many other trainers, because I do have the experience and I do have the education. I am a professional in my industry. And I think, you know, education is a very powerful part of that.
And I think you should be writing a book.
That's funny you say that.
Everything leads to the next thing. And that's your credentials alone, plus your experience. And the fact that it's touching the types of horses that you frequently work with.
Yes. I was approached by somebody from a major university about a book that they are interested in writing, but it's too early to say any more than that.
Right.
But it's a very interesting avenue that we're exploring.
Absolutely. And you're qualified to do that. So I think you should go for it. Now are you on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. We need to get you to be a part of our private group, which is Motivate Me Ultimate Support System. This way we can stay in touch with you. So if you do write that book, we can let everybody know there. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, they can do that there. But do you have other contact information or your website information that you would like to share?
Our website is nextlevelhorsemanship.com. And we have a Next Level Horsemanship Facebook page. They can also friend me at Suzanne, my personal page, Suzanne Myers on Facebook.
Okay. And I'll make sure to include all of that information on the show notes as well. Now, Suzanne, I always end my shows with something we call a go do, and it's something for listeners to go do right now. Is there something you would suggest that they do to move them in this direction or out of a job that's not filling their passion?
I would say go to what's important to you and look at it and say, you know, where's my life going? For me, that was my daughter. Every day when I was rushing around trying to get out of the house and I would drop her off at the babysitter's before I had to go to work, that was what I was doing that motivated me the most, because I thought to myself, I will not be there for her. And, you know, there are plenty of kids with working parents. I don't mean to say that, I mean, I'm still a working parent, but for me personally, that was what motivated me in part to make this move, because I wanted to have all of the ability to say when I could come and go, when I could do stuff with her and so forth. So scheduling was very important. So I would say go either do what your passion is and let that inspire you to make the decision, or go and be around the people that are extremely important to you and let them help you in terms of swaying you one way or the other.
Okay, so I would like to just end this episode by saying this to you listeners. As a go-do, Suzanne just talked about what really pushed her in the direction to take that leap, and that was her daughter. She had her passion, but she wanted to be near her daughter, and that was the push that got her out the door. So the question for you is, what is your passion, and what would it take to push you out the door? Suzanne, thank you so much for being on the show today. I loved everything you said.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a really, really great pleasure to be on the show.
Awesome. Thank you. And listeners, remember, you motivate me.